ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the inaugural episode of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I am Mike Graham.
How are you doing, buddy?
Good, man. How are you?
Not bad. I can't believe we're actually sitting down to do this.
I know. We've been talking about this for a while now.
Were we planning to do it last season? I feel like it was after 2013 that I contacted you and asked if you would be interested. Is my timeline correct?
I believe so. I believe it was, yeah. Because I remember it was either late in the season last year because we didn't want to start it because, you know, the season's already almost three quarters of the way through. So we kind of delayed it for a while, but we're finally here.
So I guess we should start by talking about last season. What are your thoughts? Obviously, we got to the Grey Cup. We'll touch on that in a bit. But it was a bit of an up and down season, or I guess down and up. The 1-6 start followed by the great ending. What did you like about the season? What did you dislike about the season? When did you think that they had a shot to get back to the championship game?
Well, I didn't like the slow start, that's for sure. I mean, every year it seems that we have to start slow. It's ridiculous. But I kind of threw a temper tantrum after that loss against Calgary. Yeah, early in the season, but
the one at McMaster?
No, the one in Calgary where they muffed the field goal.
The botched field goal. Yeah.
I don't know what it is about Calgary. You can't seem to make a field goal against them. But when Caleros came back is when I started to see this team start to get it together, and the defense started to get it together too around Labor Day, I'd say.
The move into Tim Hortons Field.
Yeah, and even though the Labor Day game, I mean, what was it, 13-12?
Yep.
Even though they, you know, the offense didn't look that great, the defense sure did. And, you know, yeah, you got a sense that maybe they might be able to turn it around because, I mean, what was the record at the time in Labor Day?
I think they were 1-6. I think it was 1-6 going into Labor Day.
Okay.
It might have been, yeah, no, they never were worse than 1-6. 1-6 was their lowest point of the season.
Yeah.
So they must have got out of that 2-6, went to Montreal, lost to Montreal when they were beating them by like two touchdowns. And then they just gave the game away.
Yeah.
And then there was all the talk after that. Oh, they got four games against the West. They're going to lose all four.
Yeah.
And then what do they do? Bing, 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 bing. Yeah. Run off four straight wins against all Western opponents.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting year. I mean, next year they got to get off to a better start. I'm sick of these 1-4 and 1-6. You know what I mean?
You know what's funny? As I was looking it up prior to us recording, and the best start they've had since I like to think of 2009 as sort of this is the era we're talking about. Belfay took them, they finally made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
2009 with Belfay, they started 4-2, and then in 2012 with Cortez, they started 3-2.
Did they really?
They did. They started 3-2. They went into Saskatchewan and beat the Riders, which they never do.
Mm.
And then they win three games the rest of the year and failed to make the playoffs. It's almost like they need the adversity of, oh man, we're 1-4, 1-5, before they really start to decide we're going to play some football.
Yeah.
And as a fan, it is infuriating.
Tell me about it, man.
So you said Caleros was when Caleros coming back was when you sort of got the vibe that
they
could make a run.
I think so.
I think it was those four wins.
Yeah.
Those four wins against the West when. I was thinking, okay, they had three of them at home, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Saskatchewan,
yep.
Edmonton, and BC, and then they went on the road to Winnipeg. And I was thinking, you know, if they can go 3-1 in this stretch, they'll have a shot at second place and a chance to sort of make a move. And then when they beat Saskatchewan so handily, like, what was it, 28-3, I think, was the final?
Yeah, I think that was the first game without Durant.
Yes, it was. Yeah, Sunseri started and was just horrible.
Horrific.
But then they won that, and then they beat Edmonton. Then they went into Winnipeg and won like a really sloppy game. I'm thinking, okay, well, if they got the three wins, and BC was really sort of up and down. I'm thinking, holy crap, they can go 4-0 here, and that was sort of when I was like, okay. Then after that, they got all Eastern opponents. They're going to do well against – I didn't think they'd lose twice to Toronto. I knew they weren't going to lose to Ottawa. So when they lost to those two games to the Argos, I kind of lost faith a little bit again.
Yeah.
But
those were that one game. Were they both at the Sky Dome?
Yeah, they were both at the Dome.
Yeah. The one where Stinky Owens had that last second touchdown really broke my heart there.
Yeah. But. Yeah, that was probably the toughest loss of the season to deal with, because I was there. I went to the game.
Yeah.
And I was right where he caught the ball, was right where I was sitting.
Oh, God.
And I saw it. I was standing up and I saw it happen, and yeah. I was in disbelief. Yeah. How do you let that guy get one-on-one coverage
with a linebacker?
With a linebacker. Like, no offense to Eric Harris. He's a good player, but he can't cover Chad Owens.
No way. I'd like to just, in a CFL sense, like, run down my likes and dislikes for the season, if that's all right.
Sounds great.
All right, well, the likes is the young QBs. I mean, they didn't perform perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, you got Claros, Mitchell, Willie, Riley, and Crompton. And for the longest time in the CFL, people have been saying, you know, where's the good young quarterbacks going to come from? And I think we have them right now. What do you think about that?
I completely agree. I'm not as sold on Jonathan Crompton as some might be. I do worry about how he will develop with Daron Carter definitely gone and SJ Green possibly gone. That leaves Brandon London, I would guess, as his best receiver. And Brandon London is a good receiver, but if he has to step into a number one role, I'm not sure if Crompton's going to be able to develop into the quarterback that he looked like he was at the end of last season. I think he gets a lot of credit for all those wins. I don't like giving credit for quarterback wins. I think it's a really, really silly stat. But if he loses both those guys, I'm not sure. Montreal might be in trouble, because it looked a lot of times like he would key in on one of them and just throw it up there and hope they'd make a play. And because both guys are just amazing talents, more often than not, they would make a catch, or they would make a catch to make a move and then score a touchdown.
The other four
for sure. Caleros I like, even though I wasn't as huge on him when he was signed last year. Mitchell, I can't get enough of him. I think he might be the best quarterback of the bunch going forward. And Riley, what can you say about that guy? Tough as nails.
Yep.
Willie, again, not as much as Crompton, but I'm not 100% sold on him yet, although he did look very good in the games he played. I just – maybe it's just Winnipeg, and until Winnipeg finally figures out how to consistently win, I'm just not going to be as sold on them as I should be. I do like Willie as a player, though, and I think that he is the right quarterback for the Bombers. I think they just need to get a couple more pieces around him, and then I think they're going to be a force in the West in some time.
Yep. And thing on Crompton is, I think Garcia gets a little bit too much credit for, you know, the thing with when Troy Smith was in there. I mean, he was just overthrowing receivers by 10 yards, and then, like you said, with Crompton, he's just tossing it up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just tossing it up, and they're making plays. So I don't see – I'm not sure about Crompton. You know, I could be wrong, but I just don't – I don't like him as much as the other four, that's for sure.
So dislikes this season, the lack of offense.
Yeah, yeah.
There were games – like, don't get me wrong. Like, we talked about the Labor Day game before. 13-12 was the final. And that was an exciting game to be at, because I like defense. Mm-hmm. But defense – hard hits and like good lockdown corners. They're not selling tickets. They're not increasing TV ratings. No. It just seemed like the offenses were off. Now I'm wondering if maybe that's a byproduct of all those young quarterbacks you just mentioned finally getting an opportunity to start.
Mm-hmm.
Like Burris and Ray are the elder statesmen. You have Durant who's like in that level where Burris and Ray were about 5 or 6 years ago. Sort of like the current quarterback.
Yeah.
And you have Glenn, who – Glenn's Glenn. We know what to expect from him. So I think maybe the lack of offense, which I didn't like, might be rectified next year when all these guys have another year of experience behind them.
Yeah, I think one of the things that contributed to the lack of offense too was the O-line play. I mean, there needs to be better O-line play in the CFL. They have to give these guys time. I mean – I don't know how you do that. It might have been you know, the expansion drafts and all that. But see, these guys need time to throw the ball, and if they don't have time, they're not going to produce anything, in my opinion.
Yeah, the expansion draft is probably another good reason why offensive output was down this year, just because, again, it's that was another 40 men added, more Canadian players added. It was guys who weren't in the league last year. There was more jobs. So guys who might not have played, if there was only eight teams, guys who might not have played this year were either on one of the eight teams we already have, because they were filling in for a guy who got drafted in expansion draft or signed as a free agent. Or they were on Ottawa, who was just, when it came to offense, was just putrid.
Yeah.
Like, they probably dragged the league down offensively more than, say, a team like Calgary, who had a really good offense and scored a lot of points, like, brought the offenses up.
Yeah, it's... And the, another dislike is an obvious one. All the friggin' flags. Now, listen, I don't know who to blame on this. I don't know if it's the players not knowing the rules and just messing up all the time. It's probably a combo of the refs and the players. Can't blame it all on the refs because they're just, you know, doing their job kind of thing, even though I think they make some bad calls sometimes. But what can be done to minimize the flags? I mean, it just kills me watching a game when there's 50 friggin' flags.
Yeah, I'm with you there. One of those games between Hamilton and Toronto, if I recall, I think it might have been the first one, had 40 flags. Like, that's just way too many. What? And yeah, I don't know if, like, I'm with you. I don't know if it's the players or if it's the refs or if it's obviously a combination of both. But there's just it can't continue because it slows the game down.
No.
And this,
to a casual viewer, I mean, you can't blame them for watching a game with, you know, so many flags and being kind of turned off. You know what I mean? It's hard to bring in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And again, it's about excitement. It's about big plays. It's about when you see things, when you see something happen and then it's negated by a flag. Yeah. You know what? Most of the time it's probably a penalty and probably deserves to be called.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think there's just the ticky-tack calls, the, like, did that really affect the outcome? And I know they're not supposed to think about that, but did it really affect the outcome of the play? And if it didn't, then there's really no reason to throw the flag. Okay, so since we're talking about flags and penalties, I guess we have to talk about the Grey Cup, because the lasting memory from that will, of course, be the flag that negated one of the greatest plays in Grey Cup history. If that block in the back is not called and Banks returns that punt for a touchdown, not only does he go on to immortality, he is – the Ticats finally win the Grey Cup, and you and I are probably drinking champagne while we record this podcast because we're so excited. Still probably partying a month later.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the Grey Cup. Let's have your thoughts on it. Let's get this out
here. All right. Well, I got some thoughts on that. First of all, the Grey Cup game was, I thought it was a good game. You know, it wasn't 50-45, but, you know, the offenses performed pretty well and I enjoyed it for the most part. But the first half was just completely dominated by the Stamps. I mean, I was watching that game and I just had a frown on my face the whole time in the first half. I mean, I thought it was going to be another blowout like last year.
I thought the exact same thing. When they scored those two quick touchdowns, I'm like, oh man, this is not going to go well. This is going to be another 45-21 or whatever it was the year before, embarrassment. Yeah. But that's not what happened. They got that touchdown before the end of the half, that bomb from Caleros to Banks. And that happened, and I'm thinking, okay, well, they get the momentum going into the second half, and then the second half is just a completely different game.
Yeah. And I want to talk about one play in the first half. Okay. I think it was on the first drive for Hamilton. And we were driving. Okay. And it was second and short, and they handed it off to Grigsby. Shotgun handoff. And you know what play I'm talking about? He gets hit.
Yep.
The ball goes flying 80 yards backwards.
Yep.
Just killed our momentum.
Yep.
And I want to talk about shotgun handoffs. Okay.
Yep.
What is your opinion? Why is this play used so much?
I don't know. On I guess I can understand sort of in, say, a first and 10 situation, or
Yes.
if they want to run it on a second and five, but it's the short yardage situations. Get the quarterback under center
Yes.
and
It's not
hand the
illegal
ball
to be under center.
off. Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I this and it bit us in the ass a couple times in the Grey Cup. This shotgun or whatever you want to call it, shotgun handoff. I don't get it. I mean, I get if they were just starting off doing them and maybe there was an element of surprise. Oh, they're in the shotgun. They're gonna pass the ball. But everybody knows it's coming now. I mean, I'm watching at home, and every time I see a shotgun handoff on second and short, or even third and short, I want to put my head through the wall because I know it's not going to work most of the time. You know what I mean? Like, are these coaches watching tape and seeing, okay, this doesn't work like 60% of the time. Let's keep doing it. Does that make sense to you? I mean, I'm not a coach, obviously, but it just drives me up the wall.
Yeah, look, you're preaching to the choir here, buddy. I don't get it either. I remember it, Cortez used to do it all the time, and it was like, why are you doing this? Put him under center, and either hand off to a fullback,
Yes.
and a quick handoff, or just run it right up the gut. None of this dance. Like, you hand the ball off in a shotgun handoff. He's already 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Now he's got to get if it's second and two. He's got to get 7, 8 yards.
I
He doesn't.
know.
He's When instead he could be running towards the line, take it right as he's going, and just bowl right through. No, we are on the same page here. I don't get why they do this. I will never get why they do it. We're going to see it a bunch next year and both be having the same reactions. Why are they doing this? It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense.
I mean, if you have a top of the heap offensive line, I can kind of understand, like, you think you can do this, but otherwise, just stop. Please, just stop, all of you. All of you stop doing
This
it.
is the plea to the coaches of CFL. Stop with
Yes.
shotgun handoffs.
If you're listening out there, coaches, stop doing it for Mike's sake, please.
Yeah,
Okay.
let's save Mike some heart attack pill bills here,
Yes.
please.
All right, let's get back to the Grey Cup here. So let's just talk about Bo Levi Mitchell for a second. I mean, this guy's money, am I right? Like, he looks spectacular, and I mean, it helps that he had so much friggin' time with the O-line in front of him. But this guy has a future ahead of him, the CFL, or maybe even the NFL. Who knows? But just give me some thoughts on how Bo played in the Grey Cup.
I don't think I can. Everything that I could say has been said about him before.
Yeah.
He's marvelous for a young quarterback, for a guy who he was a third string quarterback just 2 years ago, and he was sitting behind Drew Tate and Kevin Glenn. And Tate goes down, and Glenn plays, and they get to the Grey Cup. And then the next year, Tate goes down, and Glenn plays, and they get to the West Final. And then Huffnagel, being the smart guy that he is, knew what he had in Mitchell. I think it's just he's got. I hate to say it because it's one of those things that you say when you don't really know what to say. But he has it. He has that it factor. He just, for such a young player to come in and play as well as he has, it's surprising. You don't normally see guys in their mid-20s play this game so well when they first get their opportunity. Like, and I know he's been a backup before and he's had a chance to learn the game, but usually it takes guys into their late 20s and early 30s. Like Calvillo, when he started in Las Vegas and Hamilton, it was just atrocious. Goes to Montreal, sits for a couple years, and maybe he's 29, 30 by the time he gets an opportunity to be a full-time starter. So it took years for him. Mitchell, it looks like the acceleration is of where he started to where he is now. Like, in my mind, he is the front runner. If we were to like place bets on who we think is going to be MOP next year, if he plays a full season, he's probably going to win most outstanding player.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And yeah, it helps. He's got a great offensive line. He's got the best running back by far in the league in the backfield. He's got an amazing head coach. There's great receivers there. He's part of a great team. A team that, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they repeat next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear that. I mean, and the depth on their team is just outstanding, especially at the receiver position. I mean, what was his name? Eric Rogers?
Yes, Eric Rogers.
I mean, he didn't even play all season, did he?
No, I think he came in maybe at the tail end, maybe the last two games.
Yeah.
And then in the playoffs, he just, like, he no one knew who he was. And all of a sudden, he's 100 yards here, 100 yards there, touchdown. Like, Calgary's just a well-run organization. So if they have faith in Mitchell, why shouldn't I?
Yeah, exactly. All right, enough about them. So I want to talk about the Banks return in the third quarter. I think if you watch that playback, it is so pretty. I mean, you have Banks, you know, getting out of a situation there, going to the outside, and he points for Hickman to make that block, and Hickman just kills the punter. Mavery, was it?
Yep.
Just kill. I mean, I watched that playback 1,000 times. It's gorgeous. It should have turned momentum, because I think we weren't down by much, maybe 10 at the time, and it was still like early in the third. But does the block by Hickman, do you discredit that a little bit because it was against the punter, or what's your thoughts?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
It was. He's on the field.
Yeah.
He's not paying attention. Yeah. Get him out of the way. The underrated part of Hickman's block is he actually takes out two players.
Yeah, he does.
Nails Maver, and then McDougal, who's chasing Banks, gets turned over himself. So he took, in a game where there's 12 players on each side, he took out two of them.
Yeah.
So now it's 12 on 10. No, that was a no. Like, yeah, okay, he's a punter and all that, but he straps on a helmet and patches like everyone else, goes out on the field. He's a football player. Rob Maver's a tough guy. So he took that shot, and I thought it was one of those things that could have changed the way the game was played, because now you got Paredes coming in to punt, and he'd had a terrible season field goal kicking. I was thinking, okay, now he's going to come in there and punt. We're going to have excellent field position the rest of the game. And I was actually surprised with how well Paredes did after a couple of early short ones, I believe, if my memory serves me correct.
Yeah.
But no, there's no way I would discredit the block simply because it was on a punter. It was a great block.
Okay. Good. I agree. Okay, so where are we, you know, Ty got your second and goal at the 2-yard line. I'm not sure what, it might have been late third or it might have been fourth. I can't remember. But once again, shotgun handoff. And Grigsby gets stuffed. I mean, that really, really hurt, didn't it?
Their red zone offense cost them all season.
Yeah.
And I think people want to focus on the block that I'm sure we're going to talk about in a minute,
mm-hmm.
on the punt return that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
The inability to score in the red zone. I believe they had 3 opportunities that I can recall, and they came away with 3 points. They had the blocked field goal.
Yeah.
I guess they came away with 6 points. The blocked field goal, and then Medlock hit 2 more. When the set of downs you're talking about, second and goal from the 2. You have Andy Fantuz, who catches anything within a 10-yard radius of him.
Yep.
You have Bakari Grant, who I believe is 6'4 or 6'5, tall guy. Throw it up to him, he's going to come down with it. Luke Tasker, who, again, like Fantuz, rarely drops a pass.
Yeah, I would run a slant with Tasker.
Exactly. You have those 3 guys, and you choose to run it from a shotgun on second and goal from the 2.
I literally screamed, I hate that play when that happened. It really bothered me.
These are the things that cost teams championships, and those are the types of things that I think cost Hamilton more so than anything else in the game, was the inability to score when they had the ball that deep. They had momentum.
Yep.
They were ready to – they score – a touchdown there, and I think we're having a much different conversation right now.
Yeah, we're back in business. That happens, but I mean, just looking at the stats that Mark gave us, our writer for Blog Ski Wee Wee. I mean, all your red zone TDs, 9th in the league, behind the friggin' Red Blacks.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
So that has to be improved, obviously, big time, if we want to take the next step next year. But all right, now let's talk about this play. Banks return call back, frowny face. Okay, the block was unnecessary. I think he would have scored the touchdown without it. That being said, I don't blame Reed for the loss. I was pretty angry afterwards, but I'm calmed down now. But, you know, what do you think? Like, I guess he was just in the heat of the moment. You can't really judge, you know. He's just trying to make a play. But, God, I really wish he didn't hit that guy in the back.
I know. I've gone back and watched the play a couple times. It really looks to me like he sees the Calgary player and is trying to halt his momentum. But he's going full bore. He just can't stop.
Yeah.
And yes, he does shove him in the back. That is indisputable. Like, I think the flag was legitimate. I know there's a lot of people out there who disagree. Yeah. There's people out there who think that in that spot, it shouldn't have been thrown. It didn't affect the play, all that stuff.
But it has to be called. I mean, it was right in front of the ref.
A block in the back is a block in the back.
Exactly.
So no, I don't blame Reed. I don't think it's his fault by any means that they lost that game. He himself, from what I read after the game, was very contrite. He said himself that he cost the team the game, and I think that just shows what type of a person he is. But no, I was right there. I was watching the game. I see Banks turn the corner.
Did you see the flag right away?
Not right away. I was in mid jump. Ready to scream, and then that little yellow bar shows up on TSN, and I feel like before my feet even hit the ground, my hands are already in my head going, oh my God, it's getting called back.
Yep.
And then all that time off the clock that we lost, the fact that Banks was just – not only was he tired from the giant run, but he just looked like you're telling me this is coming – like he just did not seem in a mental state to be able to continue to play in that game, which I think also hurt because you take him off the field, there's another guy that Calgary's defense didn't have to worry about in those last 20, 30 seconds or whatever was left in the game.
Yep, and he caught a lot of heat from a lot of people about his reaction, you know, being in tears and not being able to get back on the field. I mean, you can look at it two ways. I mean, I appreciate that it means so much to him. You know, that he was so distraught, but I do agree that, you know, early in the game, I mean, this guy caught like a 50-yard pass. This guy's a deep threat. He should have been on the field. I'm not mad at him or anything, but it's just, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I've never been in that situation, so I don't know how I would react. I know we say, oh, he's a pro athlete. He should suck it up and get back out there, but I have to think that with what happened, he just honestly, you know what? No matter, I don't know. I can't be mad at him for doing it.
Mm.
I can't be happy that he did. It's weird. I don't want to kill the guy for being emotional because I can only imagine what it must be like to be in that situation. You think that you have just made one of the greatest plays ever to win your team a championship. And it was taken away. I understand the reason why people would be upset that he didn't go back on the field. I just can't kill him for doing it. It's just not in me.
Yeah. I'm just throw a random question at you. Who was more impressive in his time with the Ticats, return-wise, Banks or Williams?
Oh, that is a tough one. That is very tough. Oh, geez, you put me on the spot here.
I know.
It's not ready for this one.
I'm gonna say, oh man, it is tough. Even though I'm tough, but I
think Williams' 2012 season.
Yeah.
When it comes to returns, he set the record for most returns in a season. That's unmatched by anyone, even Banks.
Yeah.
But Banks' single game performance in the East Final against Montreal is probably better than any single game performance that Williams had.
Yeah.
Banks also doesn't have – I know it was 2 years ago, but Banks also doesn't have the brain fart where he starts celebrating and backpedaling.
Yeah.
And it gets tackled at the 1 yard line.
I think that Williams might be the better receiver, but
oh, I think Williams is definitely the better receiver. I don't yeah. I he his last season here he had like 1200 yards and 11 receiving touchdowns. So yeah. I don't think I would dispute that Williams is the better receiver.
It's tough.
Even when I'm talking about it, I'm going back and forth.
Yeah. So you want to get into the depth chart thingy, Mavala?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
All right. So give you guys a little heads up, whoever's listening out there. We have constructed a mock depth chart, just starters for the Ticats next year. And let's see. What do you want to? Do you want me to say my offensive line, and then you say your offensive line, and we'll go tic tac?
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay. So on offensive line, at left tackle, I want to bring in Stanley Bryant from the Calgary Stampeders. I think that would be a tremendous addition. I mean, he was on the Grey Cup offensive line. I'm pretty sure he did great. It's hard for me to tell sometimes because I'm watching on TV who's playing really well on the offensive line, but I'd like to see Bryant in there. Left guard, you got Dajkowski back. Center, I'm sticking with Filer. You know, he didn't have the best year, but it was his first year starting, so I think they might stick with him. Right guard, got Simmons. And right tackle, Figueroa, which I'm a big fan of Figueroa.
All right, Bryant, eh? We're 4 of the 5 we have the same when you pose this question to me. Filer at center, Simmons and Dajkowski at guard, Figueroa at tackle. But instead of Stanley Bryant, I went with a Eric Tillman favorite, Matt O'Donnell from Edmonton.
Oh, okay.
And what this allows is the Cats to play 3 Canadians on the offensive line. Now, I honestly think getting O'Donnell is a incredible long shot. Mm-hmm. He's probably, out of all the guys who I have brought onto the team, the guy I think least likely will be a Ticat next year, but I think that's the guy that they should. He is a massive, massive man. And yeah. to stick him at one of the tackle positions to just maul defensive ends. Stanley Bryant, I think is a good player too. And I didn't consider him, but I think that's a really good pick on your part. O'Donnell allows for ratio flexibility. So I think he would be more valuable to the team.
Yep.
And it would also allow to keep Simmons at, because Simmons can play tackle and guard. I was looking at guards at first. Who do I put guards and throw Simmons back out at tackle? And the guards, especially the Canadian guards, is not all that impressive. We have essentially the only one I could come up with would be to bring back Greg White. And I would like to see him back. Like the year he had here 2 seasons ago was pretty good.
But he's a massive man too, isn't he?
Yeah, and I just don't know what I just don't know what the injury situation was with him, why he missed the entire season.
Yeah.
So I'm you're going with Bryan on the O line, and I'm going with O'Donnell. So there's our one right. difference right there.
Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna have some different ratio situations here.
Yep.
That's sure. cool. Okay. So I'll go through the receivers and all the offensive talented players. So obviously Claros.
Yep, we agree on that. No debate there.
I got Tasker. Hopefully he's back. I'm hoping he's back. I don't know if he'll be back. But, you know, I got Chiles coming in from Toronto, which I hope happens. Bantus. I'm hoping we sign Bakari Grant. You know, they've been talking about we have to get a big receiver. Like you said earlier, I mean, Carter Grant's 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah, he's a big dude.
Yeah. And then I'm hoping that Banks comes back and he's a wide receiver out there.
Okay, so your 5 were Grant, Fantuz, Tasker, Banks, and Chiles?
Yeah, and I got Gable for a halfback.
Yeah, Gable, same here. And if Gable's hurt, then Madu plays.
Yeah, what do you think about Grisby? Do you think Grigsby comes back?
Or? I
will.
Didn't know he was a free agent until they announced that free agent list a month ago. I figured he was at least, when they signed him, he was at least back for, it was the end of this season plus next year. So I no, I don't. I think he'll find a home elsewhere. I'm not sure where it will be, because he is a good running back, so someone's going to want him. I think with the money that they probably have to pay him, because he had a pretty decent rookie year. I believe he was an all-star, a division all-star. Gable and Madu are still on rookie contracts, so they're probably not making very much money. So that allows them to go out and sign. They signed Grigsby to bring him back. Then you got three running backs who can play. I think they're good at running back. I don't think they need – I like Grigsby, but I don't think they need him.
Yeah.
Wide receivers, we're pretty close. I hope Tasker and Banks are back.
Yep.
Whether they are or not, I don't know. Fantuz, obviously. Yep. John Childs is also a guy that I think they should sign from Toronto to bring over here. But instead of Bakari Grant, I have Terrell Sinkfield. Because okay. – and that's also – in case Banks doesn't return, Sinkfield takes Banks' place, punt and kick returns. I think Sinkfield will be back no matter what. And I don't see them bringing Grant back as much as I would like them to. I think with his diminished role last season, I think they're trying to move on from him. But one name, he's not a free agent, but he might be available. One name who I'm going to throw out there in – the slightest possibility that could be wearing a Hamilton Tire Catch uniform is Fred Stamps.
Ooh, that's a spicy meatball.
It is. Now, Stamps said when he was his exit interview or whatever they had in Edmonton that he didn't see himself being back with the Eskimos next year.
Yeah.
I think if given the opportunity, he's still got a season or two left in him. The Tire Cats have a plethora of national defensive tackles that they could deal to maybe. And I know people don't like dealing Canadian players for American players, but with all the talent they have at defensive tackle that are Canadian, I think they could part with one to send to Edmonton to get Stamps here.
I could see that. Now, I've also heard that Nick Lewis might not be back with Calgary, so just a random thought that popped in my head. Well, do you think Lewis still has a couple years left in him, or?
Not as much as I do with Stamps.
Yeah.
I think Lewis can still contribute.
Mm. And more of a possession type receiver, like Fantuz kind of deal.
Yeah, and like if they bring back Tasker and have Fantuz, they really don't need another player like that.
Yep. Word.
I think if Lewis either isn't back in Calgary and doesn't retire, I think Ottawa makes the most sense for him.
Yeah.
Reunites with Henry Burris. Rick Campbell, I believe, was a coach in Calgary. So there might be some familiarity there. If Lewis comes here, I think that'd be great. I think he's an entertaining guy. I just don't know if he has as much to offer on the field as a Fred Stamps would.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll get into my defensive front here. I got Hickman, Laurent, Balky, and Norwood. So I'm playing two Canadians in the middle on the defensive tackle. So,
yep, that's a.
I mean, Laurent, Balky are two big Canadians, which is great, and Hickman and Norwood are phenomenal in my opinion. And I think I read somewhere that Hickman would like to be back, and that he's going to try to lose some weight. If he is back, he's going to try to lose some weight so he can, because he was in the NFL for a while. So
yeah, and he put on some bulk to play linebacker.
Yeah, so he's trying to lose some weight, get some more speed off that end there. Who do you got in the front four?
My ends are Norwood and Hickman. Defensive tackle was hard because there are three really good ones, and that's not including Lyndon Gaydosh, who I thought filled in very admirably for Brian Balky when he got hurt last year. Yeah. So I'm going to cheat a little bit here. Not necessarily my starters, but I think a three-man rotation of Ted Laurent, obviously defending East Division, most outstanding Canadian, Brian Balky, and Brian Hall. Brian Hall played excellent last year when he came in, and I don't think you can really take him out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. I think he's got to be on the field at least half the time, but I think that there's a three-man rotation to be had there with those guys.
Okay.
So if you decide that you want to start, like you change the ratio, you put two Canadians on the offensive line, so you put two on the defensive line. So I guess Hall would be sort of what would you do with Hall?
Oof. Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't even really think about that. Because Hall's a Yank, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Suppose you could try to trade him, but he played so well that I don't know. Yeah, I'm kind of stumped on that one. I'll take a pass on that one. I'm not sure.
So let's take a look at the linebackers then.
Yep.
I got Harris as one. On one outside, I got Lawrence on the other, and I got Frederick Plessis as our new starting middle linebacker.
Interesting.
So make a ratio change there as well. As much as I would like Reed to be back, I if they bring him back like that, that's great. I just wonder if after a pretty decent season, if he might be getting looks from other teams.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Who do you got at linebacker?
Got the same as you, except for Reed in the middle.
You're bringing Reed back? Yeah, okay. I understand that. That makes sense.
Now for the secondary.
Which is going to see a lot of change.
Yes.
Brandon Stewart, all those rumors out there that he might be out of here. We know Delvin Bro is going to the NFL. He's signing somewhere down south.
Yeah.
You've seen the last of him in Hamilton.
18 tryouts for NFL teams, I think it was, for Bro. Now with Stewart, I mean... The Rash said he was gone, but Drew Edwards said that he might be back still. So I kind of lean towards Drew with Hamilton topics. So even though I said earlier that I wanted Stewart gone, I'm going to bring him back because I didn't realize that that wasn't his natural position at halfback. So I'm going to bring him back on the corner. I got Stewart. I'm bringing in Damon Washington, where Stewart was playing at halfback. Butler, safety, Murray, the other halfback, and Courtney Steven, cornerback.
Man, we are pretty close on that one. I am also moving Stewart out to corner, filling in for Bro's old spot. Steven on the other corner. Butler at safety. I think his stats weren't as what people thought they would be last year, but I still think he was a really good player for them.
Oh, yeah.
Murray, I have to keep him at halfback. I know there's been some chatter amongst fans about maybe moving him to Bro's old spot, but him being kind of in the middle of the action in the middle of the field where tip balls, he just seems to be a magnet for tip balls. So I got to keep him there. And I'm bringing in Jaleel Carter from Toronto.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was looking at him, actually. Yep.
So you decided to go with Damon Washington. What do you see out of him that makes you think that he'd be a good fit here?
Well, I was looking. He played every game last year at halfback for the Bombers. He's fairly young. You'd probably get him in here for, you know, not on the cheap, but not too expensive. He's got speed. I just like him as a player. I think was he returning kicks last year?
I think at some point he was returning punts and kicks, so I guess he would also be a good fill-in for in case they lose Banks.
Yeah, so those were my factors in bringing him in.
Obviously, kicker, punter, we don't really have to discuss. It's Justin Medlock.
Yes. Would you like to see them bring in a punter, like just handle punting?
If Medlock were a Canadian, maybe. Yeah, yeah. But I think just his punting is average.
Yeah, it's average.
And if the offense can – his field goal kicking is phenomenal. I'd be hard-pressed to say that any other kicker is better than Medlock. There's some good kickers out there. Waters is a good kicker in Toronto. Paradis when he's not.
The rookie in Winnipeg was pretty good this year.
Hiver Lahu, yeah. So there are some good kickers, but I don't think I think what you gain in Medlock doing both, even as an average punter, he more than makes up for as a field goal kicker. So no, I don't really think there's a need to bring in a punter at all. Would you like to see them bring in a punter?
No, you know. I was kind of frustrated with Medlock at times with the punting, but I just think that it has too many advantages not to keep it that way. So,
obviously, I don't know if everyone out there listening knows, you live in PEI, so there's not, you don't get to go to the games.
No.
I don't know if people know that there was a lot of wind at Tim Hortons Field this year.
Yeah.
So a lot of Medlock's problems punting, I think wind played a very large factor. And I think that's why in the last in a couple of the games near the end of the season, you saw the special teams unit do those onside punts where they had guys, and obviously it worked to their advantage against, I believe it was the Owls in the regular season finale.
Yeah, almost worked twice.
Yeah, so if the wind's not an issue, I think Medlock's punting average goes up, and obviously with directional punting and with those onside punts, the point was to kick them short. So while his numbers might not look good, he was still essentially out there doing the job he was assigned to do.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Joshy, you want to get into the questions now?
All right, you got some fan questions for us.
Got some questions from the Tweet Machine. This run from @FakeGainer. As a fan, would you support other teams' funds going towards the Argo move to BMO Field?
If it meant that the Argos stayed in business, absolutely. I know both you and I, being Ticat fans, hate the Argos. Mm-hmm. Argos suck. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see them go away. As much as I dislike the Sky Dome, and I will not ever call it by its stupid new name, it's always going to be the Sky Dome. I enjoy going to Toronto to watch Ticat games. And losing that would not be good. It would not be good for the league. It would not be good for Tiger Cat fans or anyone in general. So, yeah, I think if push came to shove and the Argos needed the other teams to help in some way fund a move to BMO, I would absolutely be 100% for that.
I agree. As a fan, we don't want the Argos to go away. I mean, say there's been the argument, you know, you need Toronto League. Some people say you do. Some people say you don't. I just want them in the league, period. Who the hell are we going to hate on so much if the Argos are gone? I mean, it's long-standing tradition, you know, the rivalry. So I would support it, but, you know, I'm just a stupid fan, so it's not my money. So I don't know if the owners would be too keen on that idea.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty easy when we're playing with other people's money to decide what they should and shouldn't do with it.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe you could work out like a loan of some sort. Like maybe the CFL could take out a loan. I don't know. But the situation has to be, you know, fixed. And
yeah, they have to figure out what to do with the Argos and find a home for them in any way possible. It wouldn't be the CFL without being able to hate on the Toronto Argonauts. And it's not just Ticat fans that hate Toronto. I know there's a lot of fans around the league that dislike the Argos because it's fun to hate Toronto.
Yeah,
it just is. And I hope Argo fans out there, any of that might listen to this, realize that we say that with love. Like, it's fun to hate you guys. If you want to hate us right back, go nuts. It's all – for my money, it's the best rivalry in the league. I've gone to Toronto numerous times. I spent 10 years of my life there. And it's just fun. It's good-natured fun. And if without the Argos, it just wouldn't be the same.
No. Make it happen, CFL. Okay, well, this is a good segue. Okay. Spitzka on Twitter wants to know – he's a stinky Argo fan. But he wants to know, why do Ticat fans always smell of feces?
Oh, it's because we spend all our time crapping on the Argos. How was – if he's listening out there, how was the playoff game you watched last year with your Argos in it? Oh, right.
Yeah,
they didn't make the playoffs, did they? Yeah, forgot.
You know, I smell like roses and you know, cinnamon buns. So I don't know what he's talking about. okay, USFL Tecmo wants to know: can Calgary be stopped? And I assume he means next season.
Sure, of course they can.
Yeah.
On paper right now, yeah, they are probably the favorites to repeat as Grey Cup champions. But we've had a Montreal team led by Calvillo, head coached by Mark Trestman, that went back-to-back Grey Cups, went to 3 in a row. But Trestman was there 5 years, and they won 2. It's hard to repeat. Players are going to leave that Calgary team, and other teams are going to get better. Edmonton is a good football team. The only team that they really couldn't get ahead of was Calgary. A couple tweaks here and there, and Edmonton could be first place. Saskatchewan, I think, might be in a little bit of trouble. They have a ton of free agents to sign, and a lot of them are big name guys. They've already been able to bring back Ricky Foley and Terrius George, but Weston Dressler still not signed. Ben Heenan is still not signed. Tyrone Brackenridge is still not signed.
There's a lot.
There's and Brian Peters, who played great for them last season, is not signed. So I'm not sure if Saskatchewan would be the team to beat. BC, new head coach, Lule's health is paramount for them in figuring out how they're going to compete. Winnipeg could, Winnipeg started what, 5-1, 6-1 last year? So you don't know. The West is, there's teams in the West, and I would put Edmonton at the top of the list of teams that can dethrone Calgary before they even get a chance of getting back to the Grey Cup. And then we look at the East, and okay, ding, 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 the Homer bell is ringing. But the Ticats lost the Grey Cup by what was it, 20-16, 4 points?
Yes,
Yeah.
yes.
So
They're building something.
they
They're
are.
building.
They are building something.
Austin, Stone Cold Ken Austin is building something, and he, he brought in his guy. He started, dismantling the team that Cortez had the year before him. This season that just happened, and he's building something. We are going to be good for a couple years at least, I think.
As long as Ken Austin is the coach on that sideline, I see no reason why they won't continue to get back to Grey Cups. It may be a false equivalency, but he's been a head coach in this league for 3 years, and he's been to the Grey Cup for 3 years. So until proven otherwise, I am fully behind Ken Austin. So can Calgary be stopped? Yes, they can. And I think if they're going to be stopped, the two teams that are going to do it are the Edmonton Eskimos or the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Agreed. All right, next question. Major League CFL wants to know why he's so handsome, and I'm gonna attribute that to bone structure and genetics. What do you think?
I'm going to say that alcohol preserves very well.
Yes, it does. All right, now our own Eric from a writer for the blog Ski Wee Wee dot blogspot.com, and we already discussed the Riders free agency. We touched on that, so he wants us to discuss. He wants us to discuss the Red Blacks QB situation. Go ahead. Do you think Burris will be back or
Yes, Burris. They just prior to Christmas, I believe, they restructured his contract to give them some salary cap space. If they were gonna get rid of him via trade or by releasing him, they wouldn't have even bothered. They would have just cut him or traded him. I think Burris will be back. I think they might go after another QB. I know they really like Thomas DeMarco, and injuries derailed his chances of getting in the lineup when they were out of the playoffs and Burris was struggling near the end of the season. Maybe they reunite Burris with Drew Tate, throw Drew Tate as the backup and as the heir apparent to Burris once more. Maybe they go after Dan Lefevre. I know Lefevre, from what I saw last season, is good enough to start in the CFL. His passing leaves a little to be desired, I guess, but as a dual threat quarterback, there's none better.
Yeah, I thought he played well when he came in, even though we didn't win a bunch of games. I thought he played well.
Yeah, I was a fan. Like when they signed Caleros at the beginning of this season, I was hoping that there would be a true quarterback competition between the two, because I wasn't sold on Caleros. He I'm since I'm backing him big time now. He's a gamer. He's a guy. He's going to be a starter for this team for a very long time. Lefevre deserves the chance to start, so he's going to have to go elsewhere. And Burris is Burris. Burris has maybe 2 years left. He's not going to play forever. So I could see them going after some quarterbacks, but Burris will be the starter there at the start of next season. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I don't know if, you know, they restructure his contract. Did they just give him money for this year, or does he have a lower paycheck next year?
I believe
they just...
that they gave him some extra money in that counted towards the 2014 cap.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they took, I think, bonus money or rot, like something. I don't know what it is, but they did something. Yep. And they gave it towards last season so that this season they'd have a little bit more money to play with, which they need because Ottawa needs everything, essentially.
Yep. Listen, Burst didn't have the, you know, greatest year by any means, but it's not like he had a lot of help from his receivers. You know, I've never seen so many drop passes in my life from receivers, and you know, I don't think Ottawa's going to be a playoff team next year, but I do believe that Burris can manufacture a couple more wins than he did this year for sure.
Well, I got to think that two wins for Ottawa this past season was considered a disappointment. Expansion team or not, I think. I know there was a lot of people out there who thought that they would maybe win 7-8 games, maybe even make the playoffs. I think that was wishful thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's wishful thinking for any expansion team in any league to come in and compete for a playoff spot right away. But two wins has to be considered a major, major disappointment. And the offense was an issue there. They don't have a go-to receiver. I like Marcus Henry, but he's not a number one. Mm-hmm. So quarterbacking, I don't think, is the major issue. Quarterbacking for the future is an issue in Ottawa, but it's not the immediate pressing concern. Go get some offensive linemen. Go get some receivers. The defense was pretty good, but the defenses across the league were pretty good. So I don't know if that was – if we can really say that Ottawa's defense was – are they any good, or was it just a product of defenses across the league being good this year? No, I think when we're talking quarterbacks in Ottawa, I think it's Burris, and they just have to find a young – ish quarterback to back him up.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think that's about it, Josh.
I think it is, sir. So episode one is in the can. This has been Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw, baby.